Well, my name's Ken and I'm staff here, pastor here at Every Nation Melbourne, and we are in our second last week of a series that we've been doing following the life of Joseph. Decided I wanted to follow the life of Joseph because he's called the master of dreams by his brothers. I mean, they're using it as a bit of an insult, they're using it a bit sarcastically, but we all have a dream, right? We all have something that we're aiming for, that we're wanting to achieve. And I know in my time, when I've asked God to show me why he made me and put me on earth, and I started to pursue that, it didn't make my life easier. Sometimes my life seemed to get harder. I'd take a step forward and then two steps back, and I've said it before, and sometimes when I was stepping forward, I felt like I stepped on a landmine and I blew up, you know. For some reason I had the idea that if I was pursuing God's purpose for my life, then things would get easier. That's not true in the life of Joseph. He pursues who God's called him to be, his God-given dream, his God-given identity. But it works out for him, and it works out for him in a powerful, and it works out for an entire nation of people. Works out for his family, works out for the Egyptian Empire. Joseph, because he pursues his God-given dream, he sees people's lives change. He sees people's lives saved. So why am I talking about this? Well, today we're going to be focusing on dreams and reconciliation. But I kind of start off by talking about how God-given dreams, the dreams that he gives for us, the identity. Basically, think of a God-given dream as the reason why he made you. Why did God make you? Why are you here? Why are you here in Melbourne? Why are you here listening to this message? God-given dreams reflect God's heart. He made you in his image to reflect his heart and to live a life that shows who he is and how he cares for people all around you. God-given dreams reflect God's heart. What they do, as we see in the life of Joseph, as maybe you guys have even felt yourself, you know, who here became a Christian and then life became easier. Maybe it became more joyful, maybe it became more satisfying, but rarely would becoming a Christian make life more easier. God-given dreams reflect God's heart. They put us on a collision course with evil. Because that's God's heart. He wants to confront evil. He wants to deal with injustice. He wants to set people who are bound and captive free. He wants to bring healing to people who are hurt and broken, and he wants to bring justice. God-given dreams reflect God's heart. They put us on a collision course with evil. They save people's lives. That's what they do. That's what Joseph's pursuit of his God-given dream meant, was the saving of millions of lives. Now, let me just pause and say this. If the dream you are pursuing doesn't meet these criteria, i.e., if what you are doing with your life doesn't put you on a collision course with evil and doesn't save people's lives, then it's possible that that what you're pursuing is a dream that isn't from God. That's a bit scary, isn't it? Do I want to spend my entire life pursuing something that God never asked me to do? Sobering. But Joseph, because he is faithful to God, he's given this dream that he's going to be a leader. He's given this dream that he's going to have influence. Specifically, he's given this dream that his family is going to bow down before him. He's going to have leadership and influence and authority. And he has to confront evil. The pursuit of this dream means that he has to overcome the evil of resentment from his brothers who sell him into slavery, the lust of Potiphar's wife, his slave master, who then falsely accuses him of sexual assault and he ends up in prison, and then the apathy, the forgetfulness, the I don't care that he encounters from the Pharaoh's servant, the cupbearer, the butler. He has to encounter all this evil and overcome it. So because of the pursuit of his God-given dream, he overcomes resentment, lust, and apathy. And because he does this, he saves the lives of millions of people. He's overcoming tragedy, a tragedy of a famine, a 7-year-long drought that's coming. And we looked at last week how he was promoted from the prison to the palace in a blink of an eye. Not promoted just for comfort's sake, but promoted to confront tragedy. And he does that. He has a plan and he executes it, and millions of people's lives are saved. And it's like a fairy tale ending. If this was a Disney story, you might stop right there. He's given a wife. He's given a fine robe. He's given jewelry. He's given power. He's given authority. He's now rich. He's married with children. He's rich. He's powerful. He's respected. He's feared. I mean, what could you do with all that power? Of all the injustice that's been done to him, with the power he now has, what could he do? It's a fairy tale ending. Only thing is, it's not the end of the story. So let's pick it up here in Genesis 42. Basically, the famine has been 7 years, just like Joseph had interpreted the dreams, because he is the master of dreams. He interprets the dreams and says, Pharaoh, what's happening is there's going to be 7 years of absolute superabundance and then 7 years of total famine, that it's going to erase the memory that there was even this extra grain. What you need to do is you need to save up in the years of plenty for the years of lack that are coming. And it's been 2 years now that famine has struck the entire kind of Egyptian empire, stretching all the way to Canaan. And basically what happens is that Joseph's family, who are in Canaan, they're running out of food. It's been 2 years and they haven't harvested anything. They're running out of food. And Jacob, Joseph's father, sends all of his brothers, except for Benjamin, to Egypt because they've heard something. They've heard that there's food in Egypt. So they're going down to Egypt to buy this food. And then Joseph's brothers appear before Joseph. They don't know that Joseph is who he is. They think that Joseph is dead. And this is where we pick up the story. Now, Joseph was the governor of the land. This is of Egypt, of the empire. The person who sold grain to all its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrive, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. Where do you come from? He asked. From the land of Canaan, they replied, to buy food. Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Then he remembered his dreams about them and said to them, you are spies. You have come to see where our land is unprotected. So there's a thing about dreams that God gives us. He gives us dreams to set us on a path to follow. But in reality, he has so much more for us. You know that verse, Ephesians 3, verse 20? He is able to do exceedingly abundantly more than you can hope or think. God gave me a dream as a 19-year-old man to be involved in campus ministry at Melbourne University. That was 1998. I pursued that dream with all that I had. And then that dream died. And died so many different ways and different times. And it was resurrected. We talked about on Easter Sunday how dreams can be resurrected. And when they're resurrected bigger and greater. They're resurrected like Jesus was resurrected, glorified. And so my dream of that I asked God for, that he told me to pursue, that I pursued with all I had, that I had to encounter evil after evil in pursuing, died. But the reality that God had for me is bigger, is greater than the dream that he put me on a path to pursue. So whatever you are pursuing, get ready for it to be just the beginning of what God wants to do in your life. The dream that every nation, Melbourne, wants to pursue, I wonder how much what the reality is that's bigger. Why does God give a dream and not just tell us what the reality is? It's because we can't handle how big the reality is. What if the dream that God had shown Joseph was that he was Pharaoh's right-hand man, ruling the world with Pharaoh? Do you think Joseph would have believed that? He would have blown his mind. But he was shown something that he could comprehend. I was shown something that I could comprehend. But the reality was always bigger. What has God shown you that you could comprehend? Well, be ready for the reality to be bigger than that. So the reality is bigger than the dream, but the dream is literally fulfilled. The dream was that his brothers would bow down to him. Here they are. They're bowing down to him. It has been 13 years since he saw them last. 13 years since he last pleaded with them. Don't do this. I'm your brother. Why are you doing this? I didn't ask our dad to give me a multicolored coat and pick me to be the favorite. That's not my fault. Why are you doing this to me? Please, I beg you. It's been 13 years since he's pleaded for mercy. Now he's got all the power, all of it. Joseph's brothers come and bow before him. And what's a man supposed to do in a situation like this? Has anyone ever had a revenge fantasy? Someone did you wrong? Someone treated you maybe not the way you deserve to be treated? And you thought, you know, if only I could, you know, this is what I'd love to see happen to them. I have. Just being brutally honest, absolutely. You know, maybe it's not mean revenge, but it's a fantasy where I get vindication. It's a fantasy where I'm proven to be in the right. Joseph's brothers come and bow before him. And what's Joseph meant to do? Revenge? Retribution? Well, that's not what he's like. Jumping ahead to Genesis 45. Then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. Joseph has just revealed himself to his brothers. It's me, your brother, Joseph. Is my dad still alive? Then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. When they had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one who sold you into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. For 2 years now there has been famine in the land, and for the next 5 years there will be no ploughing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. And Joseph, he's been hard done by, and all his pain and all his misery can be traced back to his brothers. They're the ones who set his entire painful journey in progress. And he could exact revenge. He could seek retribution, but instead he offers reconciliation. And it's more than just, hey, you know, it's okay, we're good, we're blood, so it's all going to be all right. It's more than just that. He doesn't offer just surface, yeah, we're okay, we're cool. Are we cool? Yeah. No, he goes so much deeper, more than just surface reconciliation. There's a deep love for his brothers who sold him into slavery. You know, if you go back here to verse 5, this is amazing, right? He's talking to the guys that are the cause of all his pain. Do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves. He actually cares about what they think about themselves. He cares about how guilty they might feel. He cares about what, you know, just, he cares. They should feel guilty, right? They should actually feel guilty, because literally they are guilty, and he cares for them so much. He says, don't worry, don't feel guilty. You are guilty, but don't be distressed. Don't be angry with yourselves, because I have a different perspective. How is that even possible? Like, they should be guilty. They are guilty. And here's Joseph. Don't be distressed, guys. Don't be angry with yourselves. God gives us dreams for reconciliation. God gives us dreams for relationship. God gives us dreams for relationship because that's ultimately his heart. Yes, he wants to confront evil. Yes, he wants to bring healing to people that are hurt in of themselves. But ultimately, God's heart is that we are in a relationship with him. He's a covenantal God, not just any old cheap relationship, but a relationship that is actually like real, right? Like it's like real family, like functional family, not dysfunctional family, but functional family, healthy family. God gives us dreams for reconciliation, for relationship, because that's ultimately his heart. Here's the thing. What's the point? What is the point of Joseph being ruler over all of Egypt, to have all of this material wealth and power only to lose his family? But on the other hand, don't we see that all the time in our culture? People who have everything, but not their family. See it in the church. Pastors who have everything, but not their family. What is it about us as humans that would sacrifice what should be most important for things that are temporary? You know, God's heart is to fix what's been broken. God's heart is to confront evil. The fact that there's brokenness and evil in the world, That's not God's fault. That's our fault. Humans broke the world. Broken relationships are the result of our rebellion. When God made us, made the world, made everything perfect. There was perfect relationship between humans. Adam and Eve, when Adam got a phone call on his phone from Eve, he wasn't nervous. He wasn't scared. He was like, great, what's Eve got to say? Now I get a phone call from Kira. It's like, oh, now what? The first two brothers, one murdered the other as a direct result of the brokenness that human rebellion brought into the world. Broken relationships are the result of our rebellion. It was never meant to be this way. Let me ask you this question. Who are the people that have hurt you the most? Who are the people that have rejected you, gossiped about you? Who are the ones who, you know, metaphorically speaking, they wish that you were dead and they sold you into slavery? You can categorize those kinds of people, right? You can say that, you know, I've had enemies who've done that. You could also say, you know, I've had family members who've done that. Which one hurts the most? Out of enemies, friends, and family members, which one hurts the most? Which betrayal, which broken relationship hurts the most? It's family members, right? Because it's not meant to be. There's something in us that knows it's not meant to be that way. And the people that have hurt me the most, it's the ones that are closest to me. You know, and in my career, in my journey of serving Jesus, as a 19-year-old until now, walking around on campus, God, why did you make me? What's the dream? What's the point? What's the purpose? Okay, you want me to be used by you on the campus. Awesome. As I've pursued that, the ones that have hurt me most in that have been Christians. That's crazy, isn't it? The people that have hurt me the most have been the ones that have been closest to me. Family members, Christians. Family members, physical family, and spiritual family. Not just random Christians, but the ones that come to church with me. Maybe that's happened to you as well, perhaps. So how does Joseph do it? How does he do it? How does he look at the men who put him through so much pain? How does he look at them and say, even though you're guilty, please, please, don't feel guilty. Don't be angry at yourselves. How does he do it? Genesis 50, verse 20. This is him talking to his brothers. He's reassuring them. Their father has passed away. They've buried him. This is the last part of the book of Genesis. The last chapter. His brothers are scared that now that their dad's died, he's going to get his revenge. He's going to get his retribution. But that's not Joseph's heart. Verse 20, you intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. So then, don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children. You intended to harm, but God intended it for good. What you meant for evil, God has purposed for good. How is Joseph able to look at the men who are guilty and say, you know what? I don't want you to feel guilty. I don't even want you to be angry at yourselves. Don't worry, I'm going to take care of you. I will provide for you. I will provide for you and your children. Joseph knows that there's a different perspective. He's walked through life going through all that he's gone through, all the injustices, sold into slavery, falsely accused, put into prison, helping people in the prison and then being forgotten about it when all he asked was, please remember me. Joseph knows that there's a different perspective. Sometimes I get so caught up in my fleshly, earthly perspective. You know who knows all? You know who sees all? You know whose perspective really matters? It's God's. Joseph knows that God has a different perspective. Joseph knows that there's a different perspective, that God is so in charge that even evil events can be redeemed. You know, we all go through stuff, right? You know, sometimes we go through, you know, mildly inconvenient things that we get angry about. Sometimes we go through life-changingly traumatic things that impact us and impact the generations that come after us. Sometimes that happens. I don't want to be flippant with those things. God, I mean, they are. They're evil. They're guilty things. But what we learn from the story of Joseph is somehow God is able to use evil things to bring redemption. That God is so in charge that even evil... Check, check, check. Yep, awesome. Thanks, Val. Where was I? That God is so in charge that even evil acts can be forgiven. That doesn't take away from what's been done to us. Yes, it's painful, it's wrong. It even makes God angry. What the brothers did to Joseph makes God angry. But it can be redeemed, and those who perpetrate it can be forgiven. Joseph knows that motives matter. Joseph's brothers, they had an intention. They had a motive. It was evil. Joseph's brothers' actions were motivated by resentment, by evil. They intended harm. But Joseph knows that the motive that really matters is God's motive. What were you thinking when you did that? And we look at the person who, what could they have possibly been thinking when they did that thing to me? That's what we think, right? Maybe we should be asking God, God, what were you thinking when you allowed them to do that thing to me? Where were you and what were you doing? What's your plan in this? God's motives matter, and they matter the most. Maybe, Mel, do you mind joining me? You know, I don't know where you're at in your journey, but if you're in the pit and you feel like those closest to you have sold you into it, then I encourage you to choose God's perspective and not revenge. What's the point of planning how you will be vindicated before them? Maybe the point is, God, how will you use this to reflect your heart to bring healing? If you're in the pit, choose God's perspective and not revenge. You know, I've sowed my life into countless, maybe that's a bit of exaggeration, bit of preaching, hyperbole, but many, many young men. I've poured my life into many young men, and I've invested and sowed and sacrificed. We've all made sacrifices, right? We all have. I've made many, many sacrifices in serving Jesus. Poured my life into young men who just up and walk. People who get offended and never even tell me the reason why. Totally disempowering my ability to restore the relationship by asking for forgiveness. Maybe, can I ask a favor? If I ever offend you, can you just let me know why so I can at least say sorry? I've had people just walk away too afraid to tell me how I hurt them. And then I can't even say sorry to restore the relationship. But what will I do in that situation? What do I do? Will I choose God's perspective? Or will I dream about the revenge I can get? How I'll be vindicated? I'll prove you wrong. I'll work harder. I'll work longer. I'll grow a bigger church. Be better than the church that you're going to now. And yes, we are going to be awesome. Every Nation Melbourne is going to be great. And all the people who left, well, I'll show you. You know what would happen then? You know what would happen then? Can God bless that? Do you think God can bless that? If you're in the prison, choose God's power to redeem and not retribution. You know, I've served a long time in this church, and at different times it felt like I was in a prison. And I shared a bit about our story about Every Nation Melbourne and our story, the dream that we pursued, how it's died, 2020 vision, we've had it, it died, it needed to die because things in us needed to die, but it's resurrected, bigger, better, more glorious. And I've served. No, serving, when you serve God, you don't expect it to be a prison. You don't expect it to burn you out. You don't expect the joy to be drained out of you. You expect it to be challenging at times. But I wonder where I would be now if I had have chosen? Just plans of retribution. And so saying, you know what, God, you can use this. God, you are using this. God, you have an intention despite the intention of people around me. If you've been falsely accused and forgotten, choose God's plan and not bitterness. Ever had someone gossip about you? Or someone who forgot what you did for them? Probably qualified to be a pastor then. This is not about me, right? This is about us. I'm just trying to show that I've been through these things to build an empathetic bridge with you who've also been through these things. But if you've been falsely accused and forgotten, then choose God's plan and not bitterness. Bitterness is drinking poison, hoping the other person will die. But we can get trapped in it, unfortunately. Reconciliation might seem impossible, but knowing that God is in charge makes it possible. Here's Joseph looking at the men who hurt him so badly, his brothers. He pleaded with them, and they refused to listen, blinded by their resentment of him. And he loves them still. He loves them still. I wonder what he had been thinking about this moment. I wonder if he thought that this moment would ever come and how he would react. But the heart of the man comes through. And the heart of the man comes through because that heart had been shaped by a confidence that God was in control. What shapes your heart? I need to ask myself, what shapes my heart? How many people are alone and in prison right now because they were hurt by brothers and sisters in Christ? Thank you for coming to church today. There is a city full of people who refuse to go to church anymore because they have been hurt by Christians. What are we going to do about that, Every Nation Melbourne? What can we do about that? Well, if you cause that hurt, then maybe you can initiate a reconciliation process. I once drove up to Sydney from Melbourne to say sorry to someone that I hurt. I was also picking something else up, so it wasn't just for that. I don't want to sound too holy. Just make it, you know. Because I was going up there, I thought, you know, I've got to see these guys. I've got to connect with them. I've got to say sorry. How many people are alone and in prison right now because they are hurt by brothers and sisters in Christ? Maybe you're the hurt one. Well, thank you for coming to church. I know it's not easy. Maybe you're the hurt one. Maybe you're the hurting one. Maybe you're the hurt one, or maybe you're the one who did the hurting. Maybe you're the victim, maybe you're the perpetrator. You know what, to be honest, often we're both at the same time. Just because you're a victim doesn't mean that you're not also the perpetrator. And just because you've done something against someone else doesn't mean that you're not hurting because someone did something to you. I'm just wondering, can we at Every Nation Melbourne be a people that pursue our God-given dream, and that we show the rest of this city what it means to reconcile, what it means to forgive, what it means to seek the best of those even that have hurt us, that we care about them? Can we model that amongst ourselves as spiritual family? I mean, that's a value that we have, right? It's what we say we are. Every Nation Melbourne, we're about relationships, honoring God, making disciples. Discipleship is relationship. Leadership is relationship. Connecting with, you know, outreach is relationship. Can we be a people that lead in reconciliation and show the rest of this city what it means to be family? Can we, Every Nation Melbourne, be that people?
You know, there's broken relationships out there. You see them in your workplace. You see them in your neighbors. You see them on public transport. You see them on the freeways. You see them just driving around. There's broken relationships. People yelling at each other. Kids out in the street late at night, just wandering around. There's broken relationships out there. There's broken relationships in here. You know, in a room of, what was it, 50 people? There's broken relationships in here, right? Get 50 people together, there's broken relationships in there. You know what? There's broken relationships in me. There's people I need to talk to. People I need to make things right. I can't make other people want to make it right, but I can do my part. So I was talking about how many people are sitting in prison, sitting in the pit or sitting in prison right now, making the wrong choice. Just wondering, thinking maybe God wants to liberate us today if we'll make the right choice, if we'll choose Him.